Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. So glad to have you listening to the program on this Friday. We have a couple of great guests for you today. Dr. Susan Roberts of Davidson. She is a professor of political science, and we always enjoy talking with her and getting her insights on all things politics and political and policy. And so we'll be bringing her on in just a moment. But we'll also be talking with our good friend Tim Boyum. He is the anchor of Capital Tonight, which you can find on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. So, big show for you today, and lots of politics, lots of policy, and looking forward to that. As always, thanks for listening to the program. We appreciate it, and I don't know if you know this or not, but you can subscribe to What Matters in North Carolina at the iTunes and Google Play stores if you'd like. Have the show dropped right into your computer or your smartphone every single day, and you won't miss a minute. Of course, you can always find us at freedomactionnetwork.com as well. Well, Dr. Roberts is here, and we'll talk with her right now. It's always with great delight that we welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, Dr. Susan Roberts of Davidson. Welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, we've haven't talked in a while, and I think the last time we talked, Donald Trump had been elected president, and so since that time, we've gone through a lot of different things in North Carolina, a bunch of special sessions, and then we had an inauguration, and we have a new governor, and we have a new president, so a lot's happened since we last talked.
It sure has, and a lot of these things in Washington are going to have an impact on North Carolina. I think it's important not just focus on, you know, what goes on inside the Beltway, but what happens outside the Beltway.
Well, it really is all interconnected. And before we get to the broader topic of Washington and what President Trump has been doing, here in North Carolina, we see that Governor Cooper and the General Assembly kind of got off on a acrimonious foot. And just speculation, obviously you don't know, but do you think they'll try to work together, or do you think that because of the partisanship that they'll still be at one another going forward?
I would anticipate it's not going to be as smooth as Governor Cooper would like, and I think there are a number of issues on which the legislature will just not budge. I was reading today that Phil Berger said, you know, talking about repeal of HB 2 is just not in the short term. To me, even though Governor Cooper was very conciliatory and let's work together in his when he was sworn in, I think that's going to be very difficult to do. But however, Mark, I think you'd agree, if he came in with guns a-blazing, it wouldn't go anywhere anyway.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that. And, you know, the General Assembly in North Carolina does have right much authority and power based on the provisions of the Constitution, and it's hard for a governor to really exert themselves. I mean, we saw former Governor McCrory try to do that, and it really didn't help him in the long run. So I think it's a drama that we'll enjoy watching, don't you?
I do. And, you know, when they talk about one of the kind of adages in presidential politics is the power of the president is the power to persuade. And I think that's one of the only ways in which Roy Cooper can influence a lot in the legislature to try to persuade. And you know, I think that the deal he tried to broker before he was sworn in didn't bode well for how things were going to go.
Yeah, well, it will remain to be seen. What's interesting here in the state is that North Carolina, as you know, and as we talked about several times, played a significant role. Donald Trump carried the state quite handsomely, and now he has been sworn in. He is the president, whether some people like it or not. And he's had an interesting first couple of weeks, very, very aggressive with his pen on the executive order pad.
Well, and, you know, I almost have to keep up the first morning to see, you know, what's going to happen. If you wanted to talk about Roy Cooper, there's a lot of uncertainty with Roy Cooper in the state legislature. But I think that the Trump administration thus far has been very unpredictable. And I think he wanted to hit the ground running. He's made a headline every day.
Yes, he sure has. And some of the things he seems Dr. Roberts, to have planned out very well. I noticed that I was reading several of the big websites when he announced Judge Gorsuch for Supreme Court, and I think CNN was saying that this was typical Trump, the showman. He was able to orchestrate, you know, the whole event as if he were, you know, doing something with his one of his businesses. But other things he has sort of stumbled out of the gate on. And so here's a question. He's been such a successful, you know, CEO. Is it going to be hard for him to listen to other people, do you think, that are around him? Because he certainly, I don't think, will have much success just shooting from the hip.
No, but I think that he's, instead of just being a CEO, he has been pretty much, you know, when you go and put your name on all these buildings, it kind of indicates that you're a little bit of a free spirit. I mean, you really don't have to listen to a lot of people, and I think he's used to that sort of style. I'm not a fan of bringing the two contestants out and selecting one over the other, because I think the nominees were, the two were very well qualified. And I don't know, I did not see it, I only read about it. And, yeah, I don't know how that can, it's not reality TV. And I think that Trump is going to be hampered by the fact that some of people in his administration are going to want to see more consultation. And I think shooting from the hip, you know, shoot first and ask questions later, is not going to serve him well in the long run. I think his supporters wanted to see something done in Washington, and they wanted to see it done quickly. And he has, you know, he has appeased those individuals that voted for him because they wanted something to change, and change dramatically and change soon. And he has lived up to that promise.
Yes, he has. In fact, one of the things that I think you could really point to, Dr. Roberts, in that regard, is this appointment of, or this selection of, Judge Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. And I think it's interesting because if you go back to the Reagan and Bush years, you can find, if you read some evangelical or people of faith type histories that are political in nature, they often felt that they had been used. In other words, you know, a candidate, yes, we'll vote for you, but then when they were elected, they felt like they didn't get a seat at the table. I can think of several instances of that, particularly under the Bush administration. Here, however, evangelicals and people of faith, they were hesitant to support Trump because of the morality stuff. In the end, they did vote for him, and lo and behold, he has lived up to his promise, at least from the Supreme Court side of things. He's appointed someone that I think all of the evangelical leaders are very happy with.
Well, and I think, you know, they talk about Gorsuch being in the mold of Scalia. And I have read many different things about what his appointment represents, but from the fact that one, you know, scholar talked about it being, you know, a very, you know, unpredictable change, and then someone at the University of Virginia said it was a grand slam choice. And I think, though, one aspect both conservatives and liberals share is this is a person who has, you know, his decisions are embedded in scholarship and reading in the law. And for North Carolinians and all the states, he's a firm believer in federalism. And I think that's going to have an impact in North Carolina and all the other states, because there's been a, you know, with a lot of religious issues in terms of access to abortion, turning things back to the states.
Now, he has, I was under the impression that he was more in favor of allowing the states to take care of things that, you know, that they should be taken care of that weren't outlined in the Constitution. Is that what you're saying, or is he going to?
Yes.
Okay.
I think he wants some of these issues that Terry Sanford used to say that, and your listeners may not remember who Terry Sanford was, but he used to say that the states were the laboratories of democracy.
Right.
And I think where you stand depends on where you sit. I mean, people are going to say, turn this back to the states. Don't turn it back to the states. And but I think what I've read is that he's, and one person said, I wrote this down, a champion of federalism.
Yeah.
And so what is turned back to the states, I think he might see voting rights as more a province of the states, and you know, let the states make their own laws according to access to the ballot. And that's something I think that, you know, those sorts of, you know, along with McCrory and Trump's views about a rigged election, that might be one that he would say, let's put it back to the states, and the states have been doing that.
Yes, absolutely. I know that one of the things that in 2005, in fact, I was writing a piece yesterday about how his appointment might help North Carolina's conservatives, and he made an interesting comment in 2005, quoting actually a liberal scholar that said the left has taken to, you know, litigation as opposed to trying to influence policy where it should be done, which is in the legislatures. And so I'm thinking that perhaps, as you have just indicated, that Judge Gorsuch might be loath to, you know, be the judicial activist that some of the more left-leaning folks have relied upon, you know, to get things like voter ID and stuff like that struck down going forward.
And along with that, I think turning that back over to the states, one issue that I think his nomination might indicate, and this has been left up to the states, the Supreme Court a long time ago didn't want to get involved in state elections. They called it the Supreme Court a political thicket, that they might, he might say it's more the province of the states, and as you say, litigation, to look at redistricting. And that's going to be a very thorny issue. Because states have California having a bipartisan commission to do redistricting, what would be best for different states? I'm not sure, but I think he might be one to say, he might be loath to say, here's how you have to redistrict. He might leave that up to the legislature, and I don't know. I don't know at what point you might have judicial intervention into some of the plans.
Well, it's going to be interesting, I think, to say the least. And now, in the same way that we could say that President Trump was prepared and orchestrated his big show Tuesday night where he appointed Judge Gorsuch, then on the other hand, we can say that his executive order regarding immigration was possibly not well planned, not well choreographed. I would question whether or not he had input from, you know, high level advisors who could say, now, wait a minute, before you do this, you know, this is going to impact this group of people and that group of people and all of that. I'm just wondering if he shot from the hip on that.
Well, and you always need to ask yourself in politics, how will this look? And I think he bypassed that completely. And, you know, we don't know, but I think everything I've heard is that Homeland Security and other agencies were unaware of what was the executive order. And Trump is having to walk back certain stances, and I think he might be better served by vetting some of those. You can still act on things, but you don't have to be you know, it can be a little, you know, I think one a week might be good. I mean, you don't have to do everything that you, you know, planned to do when you got in and you made a pledge to your supporters that you were going to do so quickly. And I think presidents, that's why they have a cabinet. That's why they have these people to consult. And, you know, I think he would have been better served by talking to at least several of the people who are charged and have expertise in just those matters.
Going forward, one issue, Dr. Roberts, that he pledged vigorously to address was Obamacare. And yep. What we've seen here is, and I don't want to say typical, but we've seen somewhat of a typical political tap dance. I remember having people on our show from Congress 3 weeks ago or something like that, and they were yes, we're going to repeal Obamacare. It's going to be repealed. It will be repealed. It will be repealed. It will be repealed. And now we're seeing, you know, as of I think yesterday, there was a couple of senators in the United States Senate, Walden from Oregon and Alexander from Tennessee, Walden said, I'm trying to be accurate on this. There are some of these provisions in the law that probably will stay, or we may modify them. We're going to fix things. We're going to repair things.
Repair.
Now, yeah. Now, so we've gone from repeal to repeal and replace to repair. And my question to you is, do you think that President Trump will, let Congress drag their feet on this? Or is he going to, demand and insert himself into this and say, look, we're repealing this thing?
Well, I think that to repeal has been, I mean, I don't know if you look in the past how many times the House voted to repeal Obamacare, access to affordable care, and it never went anywhere. I think this time enough members are saying we're having a hard time coming up with a replace, and I don't think as intricate as the health care law in Obamacare is, that he could come up with one that would do the same things. And I think, when Hillary Clinton, when Bill Clinton was elected, there was, it was charged many different committees with looking up, and people were concerned about how she was working on the process of health care. Right now, I think it's going to be, I think I have heard, repair and replace. And that is more, to use another R term, that's realistic.
Yeah,
and I think that's what is going to go down. I read that yesterday, and again, I think that you win elections by slogans. Everybody knows that. But even Congress had not had a plan. Paul Ryan, who was a policy wonk, did not have a detailed plan, according to people inside the Beltway, that would immediately keep the provisions and be allowed to replace. Trump got himself into a little bit of trouble when he was trying to explain, we're going to repeal it, and then 15 minutes later, we're going to replace it.
Right.
Congress doesn't work that way.
Well, no, you're exactly right. And certainly there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of considerations, that have to go into, can you just kick whatever the number is, multiple millions of people off of their health insurance at one time? I don't think that Congress is going to want to do that. But I think that at the very least, there are things that they can do that I would advocate for, like, the tax penalties that are associated with not having insurance. I think those are onerous, and personally, I think they're ridiculous, and I hope they, do something about that. But I believe that this has the potential, Dr. Robertson, correct me if I'm wrong, to really be an issue where conservatives feel like they've been sold a bill of goods. Hey, you guys said you were going to do this, and now you're not doing it.
Well, I think the conservatives may have to look and say, we're going to try, members have to explain what they're doing in Washington to their constituents. And if the constituents wanted, repeal and replace, they're going to have to explain what might be looked at as walking back. And I think there were so many issues, however, that any Americans wanted, the keeping a child on your health care plan, pre-existing conditions, that really to repeal and replace meant you have to have some things in your back pocket that are going to go back into it. And I think it does create a problem for conservative members of Congress and for Donald Trump. You don't want to pivot and walk back everything that you do.
Yeah. Well, certainly this will be something that many people have their eyes on. So how long obviously, again, you don't have any idea. I mean, nobody does. But how long would you speculate that this vigorous protesting that we've seen going on, how long do you think that, are people going to just settle down? Because he's going to be in office for 4 years, at least. Do you expect that people will calm down over this whole protest thing, or do you expect this to last a while longer?
Well, and I'm reluctant to say this, but I've studied enough about some social movements, and I think freedom of speech and right to assembly, but a march does not make a movement. And you cannot just say You know, we marched. It was historic. And I think it was historic, the Women's March. But there has to be a follow-up, and there has to be an agenda. And if you look at a lot of the diffuse interest, that's really difficult to kind of separate out and say, oh, here's a plan for X and here's a plan for Y. I think the march, that the protest about the refugee issue at the airports, and you're seeing these mini protests across the nation and in Charlotte, across the nation and at the airports, that one may have more traction than a real diffuse, albeit large, march.
One of the things that, as we conclude our time together, one of the things that bothers me, and maybe I'm just old-fashioned or something, but there was such a striking difference between the Women's March and, I don't know how much of the pictures and videos and things that you've allowed yourself to see, but there was just such an enormous amount of, I don't even want to say vulgarity, but just grotesque vulgarity associated with some of these people in this Women's March. It was unbelievable, and I can't believe that the average, you know, Americans, even those that might see themselves as, you know, as Democrats, identify with this kind of thing. I mean, it's over the top.
Well, I think part of that goes to how you would characterize the Women's March. And for many people, it was, you know, it was an anti-Trump march. And I think there you had a lot of the vulgarity and the people that were marching to say, we want you to listen to us, which is very diffuse. You're right, I've been affected. And then I was very concerned with some of the language and the sexual innuendo for the Republican debates, the primary debates. And I am old-fashioned about what I think you should say in public discourse.
Yeah.
And civility.
Well,
if that's what old-fashioned means, then I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, well, I'm right there. And so, Dr. Susan Roberts, you're always very insightful. You're always a very, very wonderful guest. We appreciate your time here on What Matters in North Carolina, and we will look forward to having you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Well, always a delight to talk with Dr. Susan Roberts of Davidson, and I appreciate her insight into all things politics. And I think some of the things that she said about President Trump were, worth thinking about. You know, the point is, he's been a CEO, right? Is he going to be able to defer to his advisors and receive input on things? Or is he going to, you know, hey, I'm the guy, I'm the president, we'll do this, we'll do that. And that's going to make for interesting, an interesting administration, because I don't think he can do that as successfully as he has been. And I'm sure he has advisors. I mean, he's not just running around buying property left and right without getting anybody's input. He's not an idiot. You don't get to be a billionaire by being stupid. So hopefully, I think that we'll be able to see that he's meeting with his advisors, that he has some really good people in his administration, and that decisions and policy that come out of the White House from the Trump administration will be well thought out. I'm not sure. I don't know, obviously, but I don't know how much of that we've seen so far, or how much of it has just been President Trump saying, okay, I promise people I'm going to do this, and we're doing this, and that's it. We're doing it. And so going forward, once he gets everybody confirmed, he has his cabinet together, then we'll see how that progresses. And one thing's for sure, it's going to be interesting. It already has been. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date on everything that happens, and particularly how it relates to North Carolina. As Dr. Roberts said, particularly this appointment of Judge Gorsuch could have an effect on states like North Carolina. In fact, I've written an article about how the weapon of choice for the left, which has for so long been, you know, litigation, you know, how appointing Judge Gorsuch may cause the left to have to rethink their weapon of choice, because he is a Federalist. He's someone who believes that the, you know, the states can handle it, let them handle it. And I don't think he will be as much of a judicial activist as what we've seen so far since Judge Scalia's seat has been open. And so that should be interesting going forward. So once again, thanks to Dr. Susan Roberts. And now we're going to talk with our good friend, Tim Boyum from Capital Tonight here on What Matters in North Carolina. On Friday, we always look forward to talking with Tim Boyum. He's the host of Capital Tonight at the Time Warner Cable News Channel. And Tim, welcome back, sir.
Thanks. It's always good to be on because it always means it's Friday.
Exactly. Well, there's been a little more activity in the General Assembly this week than there was last week, and a few more headlines. And I guess the beginning of the week saw some headlines from Senator Joyce Kravic, and maybe she didn't really think about what she had put on social media, but and then also Representative Speciale, who took a different tact. He stood by what he said. And so what are your thoughts on politicians making comments, and then should they walk them back or should they take the Speciale approach?
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is, you say, oh, I can't believe they said that. You know, they should have no business writing this stuff on Facebook. But at the same token, if that's what these people think, for better or for worse, you know, maybe the public should know this stuff and they have a right to it. So I do think it's an interesting challenge for politicians. You know, we've been in the era of political correctness. I think we're coming out of that in some ways, in part because of the new president and how he is, but also largely because of social media. And people can speak their minds in a different way. You know, I think each person has to handle it their own way, what they feel right. Speciale, you know him. He's not going to back down on the legislative floor, so I'm not surprised that he's not backing down on social media. He's not afraid to voice his opinion. He's not afraid of the consequences that will come. Joyce Kravic is a more cautious individual when it comes to that type of stuff. But I also think that people innocently, or, you know, don't 100% believe, but might think something's funny, and so they retweet it or they like it, but it doesn't necessarily represent 100% of their views, and so that puts them in a tough position. I mean, if I was a political consultant, I would tell them to stay the heck away from anything that's remotely controversial. If I'm a voter, I probably want to know exactly how they feel about that type of stuff. The problem is that social media is a one-way pathway of information often. I mean, there is interaction, but you can't sense sarcasm, humor, seriousness, emotion, and so things can be misrepresented very easily. It's not an easy time to be a politician when it comes to things like that, no question.
Tim, I've worked for Senator Jerry Tillman for many years, and he still does not even carry around a smartphone. So when it came to the tweeting and all of that, I didn't have to worry about my boss.
He does speak his mind, though, so it would have been interesting.
Yeah, Lord help us if he ever gets on Twitter.
I don't think you'll ever see him on Twitter.
No, exactly. It was so funny. One time a lobbyist called and said, you know, I've been sending him texts for days, and he just won't respond to me. I said, you've been doing what?
I was texting in outer space.
Yeah, I said, don't hold your breath. You know what I mean? So it was funny. But no, he will speak his mind. But you know what? The people in his district wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, well, and that's the way it is with a lot of people. You know, I found that with the HB2 issue, you found that. There were counties where it was 80% of people supported HB2, and so they were supporters of it, and they didn't have to worry about it. And it was, you know, that's the way it was. Some of that is, you know, someone will say it's the problem with this redistricting issues regardless of parties, that these districts become too homogenized and they don't represent the broader scope of what the state is. But, yeah, I mean, there's no question that, these, you know, in some districts particularly, these people could say whatever they want, and a lot of times they'd cheer them on. I mean, we saw that with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what did he say something one time about my supporters could – shoot somebody in public, or, you know, I could shoot somebody, they still support me. You know, I mean, that's just the a lot of times the way it is. And you get into a suburban district where you have half and half, or, you know, 50% plus one vote, and it's that close, you got to be incredibly careful. So I think that's why we see such a balance of a difference in how open people are willing to be. It's a lot easier to say something that might be controversial when your district is 75% in your favor.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so in terms of It's 2017, though. It's, you know, somebody over there ought to be telling these folks, look, stay off of Twitter. You know what I mean? Or have a staffer do it, and only after, you know, it's been vetted.
You know, it's so funny is I interviewed Senator Berger recently, and I actually, toward the end of the long interview, I asked him about social media. Because, you know, he's been posting to Facebook, or someone has on his behalf. And they've actually been sending out news releases that way quite a bit, too, through his Facebook posts. And so I asked him, what do you think of social media? Is that you responding all the time? And he said he does get on. He said it's an avenue of communication, and people are on it. He owes it to them to communicate. He doesn't do it all the time, obviously. But, you know, he has a huge problem with the challenge of good debate. In other words, you may not agree, but, you know, people, the language and the tone that people use in social media really frustrates him. And so, I think he is very cautious as well. I think he just thinks it out ahead of time. You know, so much of this is about impulsivity, right? I mean, people that impulsively respond to something that either infuriates them or they think is funny. And, as a politician, as a journalist, you just have to really think through what you're about to do before you do it, which is really something we should probably do in life in general. But, the impulsive nature of social media really gets people in trouble.
Yeah, it really can. And, even somebody like myself, I mean, I'm pretty active on all of that. And a lot of times I have to find myself, you know, grabbing that finger before I hit send and saying, do I really want to do this? And so...
Well, and you have to think about how it might be interpreted. You know what you mean.
Yeah.
But I always think, okay, if I'm a Democrat, well, how would they read this? If I'm a Republican, if I'm a woman, a man, black, white, Chinese, you know, I try to think through all of that just to make sure. But at the same token, social media is about interacting and about you, right? I mean, it's not just about posting links to stories, and I do some of that, but people want to know, so I try to put my personal life into it a little bit. As well, but you have to be careful on that too. It's a really challenging proposition, but as much as people want to say it's negative, it's a massive opportunity, and it's opened up me to people all over the state that watch my show, and I can interact with them where I never would have before.
Yeah, exactly. It really is something. But in that same regard, in terms of lawmakers saying things that may or may not get them in trouble, the News and Observer yesterday and the Charlotte Observer, big headlines, North Carolina lawmakers' response to a transgender woman left her appalled. And, you know, in my opinion, I thought the headline was written in such a way as to be negative. But here we go with a lady or a transgender person that had written to Representative Mark Brody, and he wrote back to her that... something that he said, I'm saddened by the fact North Carolina doesn't provide the help you need to readjust from the mental disorder that you suffer with, which just apparently sent this person into orbit. But Brody came back and said, you know, I'm citing guidelines from the American Psychiatric Association and latest edition of Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which replaced the term gender identity disorder with gender dysphoria. So he's saying, hey, you know, I was going medical here. I was trying to show compassion, and this person got offended. So your take on any of that?
Well, I just think it's another example. First of all, I think we're going to see more of these types of stories come out because there have been so many email requests for information from public officials. Now, I know some of this stuff's not public record, so to speak, but about HB2 and surrounding it. And Representative Brody did, you know, he may have thought that's the way it was, but again, it's another example of, and he's free to do that. I'm not saying he's right or wrong, but it's another example of how things might be perceived. The transgender community, if anybody says, regardless of whether he's medical or not, that if a mental illness, they're going to be offended. And anybody that supports transgender community is going to be offended. As far as the headline, like you mentioned, that's been a problem since Gutenberg invented the printing press, because often it's people that had nothing to do with the story, may not have even read the story that write headlines. And that has often been a problem. And that's not to alleviate anything that they may have done, because people make mistakes on that all the time. But that is often an unfortunate issue when it comes to headlines. Because in this day and age particularly, in fact, I just read a study that we have the attention span of 8 seconds anymore.
What?
And a goldfish, exactly. A goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds.
Wow.
So people are reading headlines and they're moving on.
Yeah.
And so that becomes the story is the headline now, not the other way around. And it's a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge for everyone, particularly for those of us who care about deep issues where, you know, you got to read it.
Yeah. Well, in terms of some of the other legislation, and I agree with you completely, it's become a headline world. And so it's interesting because when I write something myself, you know, the goal is to have people read it. And so you're looking, hoping that, you know, that there's people who have clicked on whatever it is you've written. And I thought about this the other day myself. You know, I scroll through my Twitter or my Facebook or whatever it is, LinkedIn, and I'm not clicking on stuff too often. So, you know, I think most people, you know, just breeze right through it. And so you've really got to grab somebody with a headline, you know, as I now begin to teach Journalism 101 here with Tim Boyum.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, you look at, like, journalism websites, they're not even getting as many clicks as they used to. That's why you're seeing so many of them move over to Facebook and Twitter, because that's where stuff is shared.
Right.
A lot of times they're just even reading the headlines of that, not even clicking on the article, going back to the website. I mean, it is a troubling time in journalism to find a profit model. And it's unfortunate that that's the case. But look, these organizations are owned by corporations that have stockholders that, you know, expect returns. And so, you know, there's not, first of all, news doesn't make money like it used to, because people don't consume it in the same way or as much as they used to. And second of all, it's gotten really expensive to do because of all the technology, and corporations do not accept it as a loss because they believe journalism is so important. And so times have changed, and journalism's in big trouble. Does it become a nonprofit sector in the future? I don't know, but I'm getting on a tangent now. But it's a tough time, and we're seeing that in D.C. especially these days.
Yeah. Our guest, Tim Boyum, and he's the anchor of Capital Tonight. Watch that excellent show on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. Now, this is a bill, and so after she... I guess, got through with receiving a lot of lard that was sent to her office. Senator Kravick has filed Senate Bill 22, which was introduced Tuesday. And this is the bill. We saw a House bill and a Senate bill last session, which targets changing retiree health benefits. And this is one of those things, Tim, that, as you know, you really can't support if you're thinking politically, because, I mean, this is like, okay, we're going to cut Social Security and then nobody gets reelected that voted for it. And this is the kind of thing that, while we have heard State Treasurer Dale Falwell bang the drum for a long time about unfunded pension liabilities and unfunded health plan liabilities, this bill was, the genesis of it was the General Assembly's Program Evaluation Committee said, look, you guys got to make some changes here because, you know, there's an unfunded liability. So she had the courage to file this bill. Question, do you think it's going to go anywhere?
You know, if it's going to, it's going to be because of Dale Falwell. I mean, we saw the way he was at Employment Security and what he did, you know, trying to reduce what the state, technically it was the businesses, but what the state owed, you know, for unemployment debt back to the federal government. He is about as meticulous and thorough as an individual as I have ever met, and determined.
Yeah.
And he, in a release this week about a debt affordability he sent out, I think he wants to potentially suggest over $1 billion to help the unfunded pension liabilities you mentioned, which I think he said was $3 billion. Well, the health system for the state is also one of those things that is in big trouble. And they've been nibbling around it by changing some of the benefits for current employees and whatnot. And it's clearly something that needs to be done. But as you mentioned, politically, it's a disaster. They're going to have the State Employees Association all over them about changing things potentially and what it could mean. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands of current and former state employees I will say, though, that, you know, Dale Falwell is as persistent as anybody could possibly be about it. And if they don't have elections this year, this is the time to do something like that. But again, with what Republicans have been challenged with in recent years is messaging. So will they take this seriously that there could be a backlash, and how do they message that moving forward? I think it's going to be key about whether this actually could move forward. But I do think there's an understanding by everyone that this somehow has to be tackled. Otherwise, there's going to be serious consequences for the state.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny, Tim, is I remember back 2006, 2007, so 10 years or so ago, and I was producing a morning news show at that time on another radio station in Raleigh, and people were coming on and just frantic, oh my gosh, North Carolina has this unfunded pension liability, this unfunded health care liability, the budget for the state is going to implode in 3 years if y'all don't do something about it. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time, and as you mentioned, Treasurer Dale Falwell, he likes to say that this is a can that has been kicked down the road. So, and I'm sure that I'm not asking you to become an actuary or anything like that, but is it time to quit kicking it down the road, or is this something that really is not going to be a problem, for another 20, 30 years?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I could predict the future on that, but it will certainly limit the amount of money that's available to spend elsewhere where people want to do an education spending and things like that. At some point you do. And the problem is the further we get in the economy, you know, M's for millions become B for billions and B's become T's for trillions. And so it's just a compounding effect of a problem potentially. But you can't look at it in a vacuum either, right? I mean, there's a lot of cans that have been kicked down the road, not just by Democrats, not just by Republicans, but you know, it's happened. It's happening, by the way, not just in North Carolina, all over the country. The transportation can has been, I mean, it's beaten to death. It's been kicked so far down the road.
Yeah.
And I remember 10 years ago doing a story from, I think it was Tomorrow NC, a group organization that came out. And at that time, they said we had $65 billion in unfunded road construction, water and sewer infrastructure. And they did get a $2 billion bond passed last year. But still, that's a $2 billion bond that's spread out over, 10 years? That $65 billion now, I'm sure, is up, you know, $80, $90 billion maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
And buildings are aging all across the state. And again, like I said, this is not just a North Carolina problem, but there's a lot of cans that have been kicked down the road. And at some point, you have to take a swap at one of them and make big changes. Because I don't, nibbling around them might make it last. You know, and again, this is the conversation they've had at the federal level about Social Security and Medicare. Those are some pretty massive cans that have been kicked down the road as well. And now they have Republicans have full control, and we're still not talking about entitlement reform. So, boy, these are huge challenges for something that is not meant to produce more revenue, at least if you're a Republican who's in charge. So these are massive challenges. But at some point, yeah, I think there has to be some big changes, and Dale Falwell thinks he's the guy to do it because he did it with the unemployment debt and some other things.
Our guest is Tim Boyum, and always enjoy talking with Tim on Fridays about all things related to North Carolina public policy and politics and Twitter snafus and all of that. So, Tim, in terms of these types of things, just to kind of pull on this thread that you've uncovered here. You know, I was talking to Representative Hardister a while back, and he sits on the Appropriations Committee for Capital Improvements. And I told him, I'm like, you know, that's just not a very sexy committee. You know what I mean? Well, we need this much money for new window frames. You know what I mean? As opposed to, well, we want to expand Medicaid, or we want to give the teachers a $4 million raise or whatever. You know, he's over there having to oversee stuff that's not very sexy. As you just mentioned, you know, who wants to spend money, you know, on a bridge or a road that's, you know, out in the country that nobody's ever heard of except for the people that live in that area? So it does take a certain amount of political will to go ahead and move forward with these things, you know, at some point.
And what's emphasize that problem even further is the politicalization of everything, right? I mean, these folks are in a campaign all the time. We just got a news release about someone wanting to run in the 5th District for Congress this week. they just got sworn in a month ago. And I'm not criticizing this person, but you see what's going on here. You know, so they want to do things that they can, you know, are shiny things, are gold letter things that they can put on the resume, that they can put on a campaign ad, that they can put on a web page. And fixing windows in buildings or fixing an unfunded pension liability that the average person does not have any complete understanding of is not sexy. And so, yes, they're going to go push hard for teacher pay increases. They're going to push for road funding is one of those things that they likely would do. But, yeah, some of those other things. And you know what? You say, oh, we'll do it next year. Oh, we'll do it next year.
Yeah.
And then it just keeps getting kicked down the road, as we mentioned, and then the buildings literally fall apart, and then it becomes an emergency, and that's when it gets fixed. I mean, that's sort of the 24-hour, 365-day political cycle that we're in now, particularly elected officials who are up every 2 years. It just never stops.
And let me change the subject on you here as we kind of wind down. The appointment by President Trump of Judge Gorsuch, I particularly think that, and this will take time, but assuming he's confirmed and assuming that the Supreme Court begins to tilt conservative, and I know there's a lot of assumptions here, but that could bode well for conservative leadership in North Carolina. Perhaps they'll stop having every law that they passed, you know, kicked back from the court system. But what we've seen here is that the Attorney General Stein talking about possibly suing to stop President Trump's immigration executive order. We've seen a headline, and haven't read the story, but I saw the headline that said Governor Cooper may withdraw the voter ID suit. And so that caught me off guard, Tim. So I wanted to ask you, what could he just stop the appeals and stuff that have been going on that certainly the General Assembly would like to see play out on some of this litigation?
I mean, they may try, but don't forget that they passed that law that allows them in certain circumstances to have the legislature to have their own attorneys. Look, Josh Stein's not afraid to be political. And so I don't think there's any question that he is going to do what he wants to do, what he thinks is right, whether the legislature would go along with it or not. So most believe Josh Stein is pretty liberal. So I think we're going to see a lot of those collisions. I think we might even see more than we did under Roy Cooper. Some may not believe this, but I actually think Josh Stein can be more political than Roy Cooper. And I don't mean that in a bad way political, but he's very politically minded. And just today, Governor Cooper announced Sadie Weiner as his communications director. She spent her entire career in politics. She was Kay Hagan's press secretary and communications director back in 2014. She's been working with the National Democrats in a leadership role as well. So clearly he's understanding he's going to be in a lot of political fights as well. And that was a very strategic hire for him politically to move forward. So, yeah, I think we're going to see these collisions move forward. But I do think the Republicans will have their chance to put up their own attorneys. It's just going to be interesting for the courts to see the state kind of fighting itself in the federal courts.
Yeah, no, but just to be a little more in depth, there was a piece at online that says that he actually could, as governor, since Governor McCrory filed the appeal of the Fourth Circuit decision, he could pull it out himself, Cooper. And that would prevent the Supreme Court from looking at that voter ID case. So I think that would be huge, and I think it would certainly anger the folks at the General Assembly, as if he hasn't already, you know, ticked them off enough.
Well, and I don't know. I haven't seen an article. I don't know. But it still would shock me if, for some reason, the legislature who enacted this law or enacted the bill into law would not be able to have representation through that,
yeah.
Or at least, you know, do something with the case. That would shock me. On another level with that, though, even if he tried to do that, there's going to be so many voter ID cases that I'd be shocked that the Supreme Court doesn't take up some case that would impact that anyway, whether we were a party to the actual suit or not.
Now, lastly, Tim, we haven't really gotten into the meat of the session yet. A lot of bills still being filed. When do you think we'll start seeing committee meetings and and the sausage really start to get made down on Jones Street.
I do think we will start to see some next week. I think the House is going to at least take up one bill probably next week on the floor. It has been a very, very slow start. I think there's a couple reasons for that. I do think there's still some HB2 discussions going on behind the scenes. I do think there's a desire to somehow get through that and just get it passed. Otherwise, it'll loom over them the entire time. Or just once and for all say we're not going to do anything. I also think, you know, the Senate has the budget this year, so they're working hard on that, except for the fact that they now are going to have these confirmation hearings, assuming the court case isn't quickly decided before that, over the next month. So that will slow them some. I do think there's new leadership in both chambers, so they're sort of feeling each other out. And also they don't have elections this year, most likely. And so
right.
I think that they want to say, look, we're just nibbling on the edges. But I can't imagine that doesn't encourage them to at least think about doing something much bigger this session, whether it's, you know, taxes or some other issue that they want to tackle. And they have some wiggle room with a likely surplus coming. So I think there's a number of factors that are really slowing them down out of the gate this year that would not have. But I do think we'll start to see it ramp up a little this week. And then as we get towards the middle of end of February, we'll start to see probably a state of the state and the governor's budget, and things will start firing up in a really fast fashion, and we will dream back to the day where we didn't have a lot going on.
Absolutely. Tim, thank you very much. Hope you have a great weekend. And always thank you for joining us for here on What Matters in North Carolina.
No problem. Always good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Well, we've had a great show for you today here at What Matters in North Carolina. I think we have covered just about everything when it comes to state government and policy, and talked about Donald Trump, President Trump, and his appointment of Judge Neil Gorsuch and how that might affect the state. Always good to talk with our friend Tim Boyum from Capitol Tonight. Great television show. You can find it on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. And of course, our guest, Dr. Susan Roberts, was excellent as well. We are putting together a very nice show for you on Monday, so stay tuned for that. Rumor has it we might actually be talking with the Lieutenant Governor, so we'll let you know if that comes about or not. In the meantime, we hope that you have a wonderful weekend. And just for a little housekeeping, I want to remind you that you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/whatmattersnc. We'd love for you to like our Facebook page. Also on Twitter, we are at whatmattersnc. And you can tweet at me, at Mark Shiver. We would love to engage with you on social media. And you can keep up with everything that's going on with What Matters in North Carolina, either at Facebook or on Twitter or both. So thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening. And we'll look forward to our next time together here on What Matters in North Carolina.